Second Thought is a 100% viewer-funded operation. If you'd like to help support the channel and get some great perks while you're at it, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/secondthought.
This is a graph of tuition costs at UC schools over the last 60-ish years. Next year, they're going up another 5%. And shortly before we started working on this video, Gavin Newsom promised to cut another $125 million from the UC budget, making it even more unaffordable, especially for middle and low-income students. You probably know this already, but none of this is unique to UC schools. Over the last 40 years, attending college has gotten about 3 times more expensive, even when you account for inflation. And today, the average total cost of getting your bachelor's in the US is nearly $250,000. But I started with UC schools specifically for a reason. Because by the end of the video, I want to be able to explain this. It's the credit rating for the bonds issued by the University of California, a public university system. Now, most people don't know that these exist or what they are, but it turns out that these two letters right here explain a lot, specifically how over the last 20 years, investors, university administrators, and the state came together to screw over college students, educators, and the general public. In this video, I want to get to the bottom of how it is that tuition keeps getting more and more expensive, seemingly with no end in sight. I want you to know, in maybe excruciating detail, how schools stopped making decisions based on giving people the best education, and instead became little more than yet another investment opportunity for the wealthy. An investment that, year after year, not only forces tuition increases for students, but also makes education worse by cutting teaching positions, all the while worsening inequality, giving priority to real estate projects, and letting college's top brass take home bigger and bigger paychecks. This is how higher education became financialized. Okay, before we get to financialization, we need to start with commodification, when education went from being a public good to a private purchase. To be honest, there's no single event to point to. Here in the US, higher education has always existed on a spectrum. At one end, you had elite private schools that, broadly speaking, always treated education like a luxury good. Back in 1934, for example, you had Dartmouth.
When the Dartmouth give a rock.
It was the most expensive place to get your bachelor's in the US, and it would run you about $30,000 a year in today's dollars. With nearly no student loans to speak of, hardly anybody could afford it. And just for reference, $30,000 is about average for a private school these days. The most expensive schools, today's equivalent to 1934 Dartmouth, now cost about 4 times as much, at around $130,000 a year. At the other end of the spectrum, you had public education. Back in the late 19th and early 20th century, getting a college degree in a public school was practically free in some places, like California and New York, thanks to the UC and CUNY systems. In its early days, the UC system, for example, charged no tuition at all. It was only in 1921 that this started to change, when, for the first time, in-state residents had to pay a small $25 incidental fee. But surprisingly enough, this commitment from public schools not to charge tuition actually persisted for a while longer, at least until about 1968 when the UC system started charging a flat $300 registration fee for everyone, on top of a $150 educational fee a few years later, before eventually charging everyone something called tuition, including California residents. That's where we are now. But to be clear, this long-gone moment in time where tuition was low doesn't mean higher education used to be accessible. Not only was education limited to mostly white men, public education costs could still be daunting for most. In the 1920s, some public colleges were charging up to 8% of a typical household's yearly earnings. And on top of that, the opportunity cost of not working for a few years alone was just too high for middle and low-income families. But we're focusing on tuition for now. And until around the 60s, tuition was still relatively cheap by our modern, truly absurd standards. The combination of state funding to public schools and policies like the GI Bill allowed millions of Americans to have their education paid for, or at least remain decently affordable, for decades. But that all changed when 2 things happened. Reagan became governor of California in 67, and Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Higher Education Act in 65. Let's start with Reagan.
His run as governor went exactly as you imagine it would. Within the first few years of his mandate, Reagan announced cuts to public funding for schools in the UC and Cal State system, forcibly shut down all 28 campuses, and, in effect, put the first nail in the coffin for free college in California by making them start to rely on tuition. Why? In his speeches, Reagan cited budget constraints. California was running a deficit, and Reagan made it seem like that was a problem. But that's not really what his main motivation behind gutting public education was. After World War II, thanks to the combination of the GI Bill and UC schools still not charging tuition, the class character of higher education had started to change. Rather than being reserved for mostly upper-class white men, college education was steadily becoming more and more accessible. The working class was starting to gain entry to these institutions, and, maybe unsurprisingly, began using them as sites for mobilizing against the Vietnam War. Having seen how student protests in France in May of 1968 had turned into a countrywide general strike and very nearly became a full-blown revolution, Reagan and his allies became concerned that this, quote, educated proletariat, his advisor's words, might become a problem for the health of the American empire. So to protect against a rising tide of student activism, Reagan cracked down on college campuses and started suggesting the idea of replacing state funding with personal tuition backed by loans. Enter Johnson's Higher Education Act. The HEA was drafted to give students unprecedented access to federal loans to pay for tuition without collateral, with the idea that since a college education meant access to higher-paying jobs, this would be an essentially free policy for the government. Johnson argued that the government could issue loans and be relatively confident that the students would pay them back, increasing access to education while costing the government next to nothing. But the reality was very different. While the original plan was to have federal student loans work in tandem with increasing funding for public education, in practice, the HEA killed the expansion of public universities. Thanks to the HEA and the boom in student loans, private schools could suddenly take advantage of this federally backed debt to increase tuition massively, knowing full well students would be able to pay thanks to the government. Simultaneously, public schools could use cuts in state funding, like those Reagan enacted, as an excuse to raise tuition too. And just like that, almost overnight, education went from being an increasingly accessible public good, and a site where people could learn and come together to resist injustice, to a private commodity accessible only to those willing to take on pretty daunting levels of debt. Since then, the American dream has become completely tied to getting a college education. And thanks to these changes, colleges have been able to leverage the anxiety of falling behind to increase tuition further. In 1998, for example, the California Legislative Analyst released a report that said between 1978 and 1998, all income growth went to the top 20% of earners. Thanks to this sort of information, colleges realized what they were actually selling. It's this idea that getting a college education is what's going to decide whether you're in the bottom 80% and things don't get better for you and your family, or the top 20% where you have a shot at progress. Essentially, a college education became a sort of investment. They're selling you a safety net against falling into the stagnating group. To quote professor of philosophy and political economy at UC Irvine, Robert Meister, "Instead of promising to be a great equalizer in the state economy, public higher education was now claiming credit for widening economic inequalities so that it could charge its students a higher price for the advantages it bestowed upon them. So even though a college education is clearly no longer a guarantee of anything and comes with this massive debt burden, colleges can point to the fact that average lifetime earnings for those with a college degree are still higher than for those who stop at high school, and use that anxiety to keep raising tuition. This way, they can increase prices without needing to care about the quality of education and still see rising demand. The quality of education doesn't decide its value. The spread of earnings after college does." But this is only part of the picture. Financialization goes much, much deeper. In 2009, the UC Board of Regents announced that tuition would increase an insane 32%, breaking, for the first time, 10 grand a year for in-state residents at a public school. I don't think I need to say this, but numbers like that are shocking and hard to really understand. In just 10 years, between 2001 and 2011,
going to a UC school as a California resident went from costing about $3,000 a year to four times as much at over $12,000 a year. There's almost nothing that experiences that kind of inflation that quickly. So, how can it be explained? In public, the Board of Regents, the people in charge of setting tuition costs, cited budget cuts. And there were budget cuts. When he came into office as governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger signed the Higher Education Compact, a policy that made it so UC schools would gradually replace state funding with, quote, private resources to run basic university services. Not only is this less money from the state, it's an official policy calling for a public school to privatize its revenue. And in the face of these changes, the school argued that raising tuition was the only way for it to remain afloat. But that's not all they did. UC schools also issued what are called general revenue bonds. Essentially, colleges ask for a loan from investors and strike a deal with them to get large sums of money up front in exchange for a regular return every year until they eventually pay them back in full. Seems almost normal when you say it like that, but here's how the scheme worked. First, as we've seen, colleges play off the anxiety of falling behind, the cuts in state funding, and the idea that education is a private commodity to publicly justify raising tuition. Once that's done, university administrators then turn to private sources of investment. Now that they've raised tuition, using records from previous years, schools can point to their ability to raise tuition and still increase demand to sell themselves as an incredibly safe investment. An investment that will yield a better return than state bonds while still benefiting from state protection because, at the end of the day, they're still a public service that the government can't ever fully abandon. Investors know that the state can't raise taxes willy-nilly, but now they have concrete proof that universities can do that for tuition, so their credit ratings go up. In practice, this means universities get to act like companies, that they can somehow raise the price of the goods they're selling without seeing the decrease in demand you'd expect, and as a public institution guaranteed to continue existing thanks to the support of the government. This is a golden investment opportunity. But to make these bonds even more attractive to investors, not only do colleges point to their ability to raise tuition costs and therefore never run out of money, universities also use the tuition they get as collateral. And if you're thinking, hey, none of this sounds like what tuition's supposed to be for, you'd be right. What you'd expect is that tuition goes towards financing students' education, either making it more affordable or improving its quality. Or at the very least, if tuition is being used as collateral for these loans, then the money from those loans should go towards making education better. That's not what they do. Instead, that money goes into financing new construction. New housing students will pay rent on, fancy buildings, sports centers, things that not only provide opportunities for a real estate investment, but mainly make the university more attractive on a rankings list and establish a better brand for the school. Why is that important? Because that brand identity feeds back into the credit rating that colleges use to get more money from issuing bonds. In other words, getting more money and investing it into new fancy buildings raises the school's ability to get more money through issuing these same bonds in the future. And that's not just me saying it. Rating agencies are clear that this is part of the calculation. Moody's, another credit rating agency's higher education methodology, is explicit that, quote, brand strength is a key component of how they calculate the value of higher education debt. Okay, great, makes sense, but back to the core issue. Why is this a problem? For starters, now that colleges are in the business of accruing private debt, paying back that debt takes precedence over everything else a university is supposed to do. Although UC schools could use this tuition for anything, in practice, this specific setup means that they have to use tuition to repay interest and principal on bonds before any money can go towards educational uses. Every bond that the UC issues comes with the stipulation, a legally defined general covenant in the contract of the loan, that the UC is required to raise tuition and fees as much as necessary to repay bondholders, something that the university compounds by also promising to do nothing that would cause its bond ratings to fall or hurting the school's brand in any way. In simple terms, regardless of where the funds come from, under this current financialized system, the priority for colleges is paying back their investors. Tuition is no longer revenue for these schools. It's capital. It's a source of profit. And again, this is at a public school. Because of financialization, not only can universities not lower tuition, they can't prioritize things like teacher or staff pay. As a result, you get colleges and universities all across the country gutting job security for educators, dining, and custodial workers. It's now pretty unlikely to get a tenure-track job in higher ed. Full-time professors are constantly being replaced with part-time lecturers and adjuncts who not only make a lot less, but can be much more easily fired. By some estimates, 70% of this country's professors are now part-time. The same goes for operational staff. Unionized dining and custodial jobs at schools all across the country are being outsourced and replaced as the university stops functioning like a public institution and instead begins to operate on the mentality and razor-thin margins of a corporation. But not everyone at these schools is getting the same treatment. Specifically, university administrators seem to be completely immune to all these budget problems. After 2004, when this financialized strategy started to take effect, the salaries and earnings of top decision makers in the UC system were reset. Not according to the compensation package typical for senior workers in state agencies, but on the level of private sector salaries. The public university being remade in the image of a private corporation also means copying the income spread between highly expendable workers at the bottom and grossly overpaid managers at the top. The truth is, we're stuck in a vicious cycle. Tuition keeps going up, so schools get more money to use as capital to fund BS construction projects that increase their rankings. People graduating from these highly ranked schools means greater wealth inequality, which means more anxiety, justifies further increased tuition, and therefore raises schools' bond ratings, which only benefits capitalists. Because at the end of the day, capitalists do better the more schools increase wealth inequality. Both in general and in this specific scenario where they're directly invested in it. For their part, administrators use their privileged access to this capital to raise their earnings. States cut funding to schools, citing budget gaps and universities' ability to raise private funds. And when they try to square their internal budgets with this new reality, schools pass those state cuts on to people who actually make the university run, professors and staff. Education quality gets worse, but hey, that doesn't matter because tuition still goes up. And student debt keeps going with it. I shouldn't have to tell you that this is not a system that works. This is a system that treats education like any other financial asset. And that's not what education is meant to be. Education is a social good. We need people getting access to higher education. As a society, the more people push the boundaries of human knowledge, the more there is to gain for all of us. And the more we get the chance to develop our skills, our passions, and our intelligence, the better off we are as individuals. Our species thrives specifically because we don't keep the knowledge we acquire to ourselves. We pass it on. We thrive because things get better when people are trained to do things that they couldn't do alone and that no one else has ever done before. But when colleges become empty shells for money to pass through, nothing more than pretty buildings filled with passionate people desperately trying to hang on, it means we've given up on improving as a society. It means we've lost faith in our ability to actually prepare for the future. And that doesn't end well for anyone. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that this channel is entirely grassroots funded. Since sponsors don't want to touch videos like these, we have to rely on the generous support of viewers like you. If you'd like to help keep this channel afloat and get some great perks while you're at it, consider becoming a patron on Patreon. All patrons, regardless of pledge amount, get early access to every video, plus access to our patrons-only Discord server. We just made a major update to the Discord, with a revamped leveling system and monthly Discord Nitro giveaways to active members. We've also got a bunch of other cool stuff like a book club, live Q&As with me every month, and a dedicated educator role for users ready to answer any questions you have about socialism. We've built a thriving community, and we'd love for you to be part of it. So if you'd like to join the Discord, get early access to every video, and help support genuinely principled socialist content, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/secondthought. If you enjoyed this video, leave us a like. If you hated it, a thumbs down.
You can check out our other content by following the links on your screen. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.